Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present His Wife's Favorite Mistress, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The First Lie I Loved. I never meant to fuck a married man. At least, that's the lie I used to tell myself to feel better about the things I do when the sun goes down and my demons start whispering sweet little nothings in my ear. But the truth? I meant to. Every second of it. Every look, every smile, every step that led me into James Caldwell's life was as calculated as a sniper's shot. And God, I never missed. It started on a Thursday night. The kind of night that smells like expensive perfume, fake smiles, and desperation hidden beneath floor-length gowns. A gallery opening in Tribeca. I'd been invited by a friend of a friend, the kind of person who throws around words like aesthetic and texture while sipping champagne they didn't pay for. I wasn't there for the art. I couldn't give two shits about some oil painting of a half-naked ballerina smudged in blood-red strokes. I was there for what the art attracted. Men with too much money, not enough morals, and just enough guilt to keep things interesting. I walked in wearing a black satin dress that clung to my hips like a secret. My lipstick was the kind of red that made married men forget their vows and single men trip over their tongues. I had heels high enough to make me look like a threat, and a walk slow enough to make them wonder what I tasted like. And he saw me. He was standing near a sculpture that looked like a melted penis, hands in his pockets, drink in hand, confidence oozing off him like a slow leak. His suit was charcoal gray, sharp and custom-fitted. His hair was dark, streaked with just enough silver to scream power. And his eyes, they were the eyes of a man who had seen everything and still wanted more. James Caldwell, CEO, real estate mogul, married, two kids, suburban mansion in Rye, a face that made women double take, and a wallet that made them stay. He looked at me like I was a question he didn't want the answer to. I met his stare, didn't smile, didn't blink. I just let it stretch slow and deliberate until he had no choice but to come to me. He tried to pretend he was looking at the art, but his body gave him away. He shifted, turned slightly in my direction. His fingers tightened around his glass. His tongue wet his lips. Predator energy, but he didn't know I'd already claimed the role. When he finally walked over, I could practically hear the voice in his head saying, "Don't do it. Don't be stupid." He did it anyway. "You've been staring at that painting like it personally offended you." I glanced at the piece, a chaotic mess of black and orange smears that looked like someone vomited rage onto the canvas. I smirked. "Maybe it did." He laughed. Smooth. Confident. The kind of laugh that belongs to someone who gets what he wants without asking twice. "I'm James," he said, offering his hand like it was a goddamn gift. I stared at it, then took it. "I know." That caught him off guard for half a second. Just a flicker. Most men would puff up. Not James. He liked the chase. He leaned in, just close enough for me to smell the bourbon on his breath. "And who do I have the pleasure of offending tonight?" I tilted my head. "Someone who bites." His eyes darkened. Not with fear. With desire. I gave him my name. A fake one, of course. I never use my real name on the first night. Real names are too dangerous. Too intimate. Too easy to trace when the guilt kicks in later. He didn't care. He was too busy undressing me with his gaze. We talked. Well, he talked. About his properties, his board meetings, the bullshit politics of mergers and acquisitions. I nodded, asked the right questions, played the part of the curious stranger who didn't know exactly how much his net worth was or how many times he'd cheated before. He liked feeling important. I let him. Men like James, they don't want honesty. They want fantasy. Mystery. A beautiful woman who makes them forget the weight of the lives they've built. So I became that woman. He ordered me a drink. Pinot Grigio. Sweet. Not my taste, but I sipped it anyway, licking the rim of the glass with slow, deliberate strokes just to watch his jaw clench. By the time we stepped outside, the air had turned cold, sharp, intoxicating. He offered me his coat. I declined. I liked the chill. It reminded me I was alive. His driver opened the car door. I slid in first, crossed my legs slowly, making sure the slit in my dress gave him a glimpse of what he was really paying for. The ride to the hotel was silent, electric, thick with tension. He didn't touch me. Not yet. But I felt his stare burning through my skin. I didn't look at him. I didn't need to. I had him. When the elevator doors closed behind us, that's when it changed. He pushed me against the wall before the doors even started moving. His mouth was on mine, hungry, brutal, like he was trying to erase something. Maybe the guilt. Maybe the years of pretending. Maybe her. I kissed him back just as hard. My hands tangled in his hair, nails digging into the back of his neck. He tasted like whiskey and danger. I moaned against his mouth, knowing exactly what that sound would do to him. The room was a blur. Clothes hit the floor like confessions. His hands were everywhere, ravenous, desperate, shaking with the kind of need that doesn't come from love, but from being denied for too long. And when he finally fucked me, it wasn't soft. It wasn't gentle. It was filthy and raw and goddamn perfect. He whispered things in my ear, things he should have saved for his wife. Called me his fantasy. His escape. Said no one ever made him feel this alive. I didn't say anything back. I didn't have to. My body did all the talking. After we laid there in silence, his chest rose and fell beside me, and I watched the city lights dance across the ceiling. He looked over at me like he wanted to say something important. Instead, he reached for his wedding ring on the nightstand and slid it back on. That was the moment. That tiny, almost invisible moment, when he reminded me he was never mine. And that's when I decided I didn't just want his body. I wanted her. I wanted to taste the woman who wore that ring every night. I wanted to see if her lips trembled the same way his did when I bit his skin. I wanted to know if she cried when she came. But most of all, I wanted to watch her break. Because men like James? They're easy. Predictable. But women? Women are the real prize. And I was ready to play. Chapter 2, A Taste of Her. I didn't see her face until 2 weeks later. And when I did, when I really looked at her, I understood exactly why James fucked women like me. She was perfect. Too perfect. The kind of woman who makes other women feel small. The kind men marry because their mothers approve and their fathers nod in satisfaction. The kind who looks beautiful even when she's angry. The kind who can wear white without irony. Her name was Charlotte. Of course it was. A name like that doesn't belong to real people. It belongs to magazine covers, luxury skincare commercials, and country club membership lists. Charlotte Caldwell, 37 years old, vice president of a foundation that empowers underprivileged girls, or some shit like that. She wore pearls like they were extensions of her spine. Her smile was polished. Her posture military. Her wardrobe? Cashmere, tailored slacks, silk blouses in muted colors that said, "I have taste. I have discipline. I don't fuck up." But I could see the cracks. Oh, I could feel them. I saw her first at a benefit James invited me to. Not officially, of course. No, I wasn't on the guest list. I had to crash the event, fake a name, slip into a secondhand gown that hugged my ass tighter than God ever intended, and pretend I was one of them. But I belonged there more than most of the Botoxed wives sipping cocktails and gossiping behind diamond-studded teeth. Because I wasn't playing a role. I was the game. Charlotte was working the room like a politician. Handshakes, laughs, the occasional hand on a forearm to fake intimacy. But her eyes weren't smiling. Not really. Her eyes were tired. A little distant. She looked like a woman who hadn't been fucked properly in months. And I knew for a fact she hadn't. Because James had been buried between my thighs the night before, whispering her name by accident. And I hadn't stopped him. I circled her slowly at the event. Not obviously. I was a ghost, brushing past her, catching her perfume in the air. Gardenia and jasmine. Light. Feminine. Expensive. It made me dizzy. It made me wet. I watched the way her hands moved when she talked. Graceful, delicate, controlled. Everything about her was controlled. From her immaculate bun to her closed-lipped smile. I wanted to break that control. I wanted to know what her laugh sounded like when it wasn't rehearsed. I wanted to know if she moaned when she touched herself. I wanted to see if she'd cry after the first orgasm I pulled from her body. And most of all, I wanted to see her face the moment she realized I wasn't just fucking her husband. I was inside her world. After the event, I followed them to their car. James walked beside her like a trained dog, smiling, nodding, opening her door. He wasn't looking at her the way he looked at me. Not even close. His body language said obligation, not desire. And Charlotte? She was smiling that same smile. That wife smile. The one you wear at fundraisers, funerals, and therapy sessions. The one that hides everything. It turned me on. I started researching her. Yeah, I stalked her. You think obsession is only for men? No, sweetheart. Women do it better. Deeper. More thorough. I followed her social media, her charities board, her Pilates studio, her favorite florist. I mapped her life like a hunter tracking prey. I learned her routines, her haunts, her little patterns. And the more I watched, the more I wanted her. James became a tool, a point of entry. Our sex got rougher, colder. I started calling her name while he fucked me just to see how he'd react. And when he flinched, I smiled. Because he wasn't the target anymore. She was. One afternoon, I followed her into a boutique on Madison Avenue. She was alone, thumbing through blouses in soft colors, pausing to hold up a lavender top that would have made her look even more like a goddess. "Try the emerald," I said, standing beside her like I belonged there. She turned, startled at first, then smiled. "A real one. Curious. A little shy. It would bring out your eyes," I added, gently brushing a strand of her hair behind her ear like it was the most natural thing in the world. She blinked. "You think? I know." It was the first time I touched her, and I felt something shift in the universe when I did. Charlotte chuckled, soft and disarming. "I don't normally take fashion advice from strangers, but thanks." I offered my hand. "I'm Riley. Not my real name, but close enough to feel personal." "Charlotte," she replied, slipping her palm into mine. I held it just a second too long. It was warm. Fragile. Dangerous. We ended up talking for half an hour. Just casual stuff. Clothes. Books. How New York had become a bit too performative lately. She said it with a hint of rebellion in her voice, like she was sick of being perfect. I told her she didn't have to be perfect around me. And God help me, I meant it. That night, I didn't sleep. I laid in bed, thinking about her fingers, her voice, her scent. I imagined her lips parted in a gasp while I slid my hand under that pearl-buttoned blouse. I imagined pinning her to the wall of that overpriced walk-in closet while she tried to muffle her moans so the nanny wouldn't hear. I touched myself to the idea of her. To the image of her husband pounding into me while I whispered, "Your wife tastes better than you ever will." The next day I sent her flowers. Anonymous. No card. Just gardenias and jasmine. The same scent she wore that night. She posted them to her Instagram story. No caption. But I saw the way her hand hovered over the petals. And I knew I was under her skin. James called that night. He wanted to meet. I let it go to voicemail. Because I didn't want him anymore. I wanted her. And now. She was curious. Chapter 3. Curiosity tastes like honey. It started with coffee. Isn't that how all dangerous things begin? Something so casual, so deceptively mundane, it almost fools you into thinking you're still in control. But beneath every "let's grab coffee sometime" is a wildfire waiting to be lit. And baby, I came holding the match. Charlotte texted me 3 days after the boutique encounter. I'd given her my number, disguised as a networking gesture, wrapped in the silk of female camaraderie. She hesitated, sure, but curiosity is a slut with no self-control, and Charlotte, she was starving for something she couldn't name. "Hey Riley. Random, but, if you're free this week, coffee?" I stared at that message for a full minute. My fingers itched to respond immediately, but that's not how you play the game. Not when you're this deep in it. I waited 45 minutes. "Coffee sounds perfect. Friday," she replied instantly. "Yes. 11? Bluestone on 57th. I confirmed, calm on the outside, absolutely soaked on the inside. Because here's the thing. When a woman like Charlotte breaks routine to see another woman she barely knows, it's not just a coffee date. It's a confession. And I was ready to hear every unspoken word between the lines. Friday came like a storm cloud made of lust and deception. I wore black, tight denim, a low-cut bodysuit, and a leather jacket that hugged my waist like a secret lover. My makeup was minimal but deadly. Sharp liner, bare lips, just enough to make her wonder what kissing me would feel like. I didn't show up to be her friend. I showed up to ruin her. She was already sitting by the window when I arrived, sipping an oat milk latte, legs crossed, golden hair swept over one shoulder like it fell that way on purpose. She wore a cream turtleneck and high-waisted trousers, a look so effortlessly elegant it made my thighs ache. She stood when she saw me, smiled that soft, practiced smile. "Hey, you look amazing." I slid into the seat across from her. Smirked. "I always do." She laughed, flustered, cheeks flushing. "Confident much? You'd be surprised what confidence gets you." The barista interrupted just in time to keep her from responding. I ordered a black coffee, strong, bitter, unfiltered, because that's what I am. We talked. For hours. At first, it was surface stuff, family, work, the city. I let her speak. I watched the way her hands fluttered when she got excited, how her voice dipped when she spoke about her kids, how her eyes darkened when she mentioned James. She tried not to say his name too often, like speaking it too loudly might break the spell. Eventually, the walls cracked. I don't know why I texted you, she admitted, eyes flicking down to her cup. I don't know. There's something about you. I leaned in, resting my chin on my palm. Something good or something dangerous? She looked up slowly. Maybe both. I didn't smile. I held her gaze, let silence crawl between us like a third body. She didn't look away. Curious little Charlotte. We parted after 3 hours, hugged in that too long, too close way women do when they're testing the waters. I let my hand slide along her waist as we pulled away. Her breath hitched. Good. I waited exactly 12 hours before texting her. I'm still thinking about that coffee, but mostly about the way you blushed when I complimented your laugh. 3 minutes later. Shut up. I did not blush. You did. It was sexy. Silence. For 15 whole minutes. Then. I'm married, you know. Oh, darling. I knew better than anyone. So is your husband. Doesn't stop him. She didn't reply that night, but she liked the message. And that was enough to keep the current running through her veins. The next time we met, it was for wine. Her suggestion. Her pick. Her idea. A quiet little bar tucked between buildings, low lighting, soft jazz, the kind of place you take a secret to die. Or to bloom. She wore a wrap dress that clung to her curves like a whisper. Her lips were painted soft pink, and her hair was down, cascading like gold over her shoulders. I wanted to eat her alive. She sat closer this time. Our knees touched under the table. Her perfume hit me harder than the Pinot Noir. I watched the way her throat moved when she swallowed, how she wet her lips every time she laughed. She was flirting, poorly, but sincerely. I leaned in. You know what I've been thinking about, Charlotte? She tilted her head. What? Your neck? She blinked, stunned. My neck? I nodded slowly. Yeah. How soft the skin is right here. I brushed my fingertip along her collarbone. She didn't pull away. How you'd taste if I kissed you there. Her breath caught. Riley. I smiled, slow and wicked. Tell me to stop. She didn't. Instead, she exhaled, trembling, and let her fingers drift over mine under the table. I squeezed them gently. The waitress came just then, shattering the moment with an apologetic smile and the check. Charlotte cleared her throat, flustered, cheeks burning. I let her pay. I always let the guilty ones pay. Outside, the air was sharp. I walked her to her car, both of us buzzing with tension, so thick it made the sidewalk feel like glass. She turned toward me before opening the door. Her eyes searched mine like she was asking permission to fall. I don't know what this is, she whispered. It's hunger, I said softly. And baby, I know how to feed it. I leaned in, slow enough to let her stop me. She didn't. Our lips met. Soft at first, unsure, experimental. Then deeper. Hotter. Her hands tangled in my hair, mine gripped her waist. She whimpered when I pressed my thigh between hers, and I felt her body melt into me like she'd been waiting years to be touched like this. When we pulled apart, her lipstick was smeared. Her eyes were glassy. Her breath came in short gasps. I have to go, she murmured. I stepped back. Smiled. You'll text me, I said. She hesitated, then nodded. I will. And she did. That night. You kissed like you knew everything I've never said out loud. Because I do. What the fuck are you doing to me? Exactly what you've been begging for. Charlotte Caldwell was unraveling. Thread by thread. And I wasn't about to stop. I was just getting started. Chapter 4. The Taste of Guilt. Guilt tastes different when it's shared. It's not bitter. It's not sharp. It's slow. Like warm honey laced with poison. Sweet at first, then dangerous when it lingers in your blood too long. And Charlotte? She was licking it off her lips like she couldn't decide if it made her sick, or if she craved more. After that kiss, our first real kiss, she vanished for 4 days. No texts. No calls. Not even a "that was a mistake" message, which is usually the go-to for women like her. You know the type, raised to be composed, trained to be elegant, married to be quiet. They panic when they feel something. And I knew Charlotte had felt it. I also knew she was spiraling. I imagined her lying awake next to James, his back turned to her, her hands tucked under the pillow as if that could bury the ache. I pictured her staring into her bathroom mirror in the middle of the night, running her fingers along her lips where mine had been. I saw her pacing the halls of her immaculate home, looking at wedding photos that suddenly felt like lies. But what she didn't know was this. I wasn't waiting. I was planning. Every hour she stayed silent, I mapped out how I would twist the knife deeper. This wasn't about sex anymore. It wasn't even about James. It was about her. About breaking down every wall she'd ever built, every illusion she clung to like armor. I wanted to see what was left when the pearl necklace came off and the perfect wife cracked open like a soft-boiled egg. And when she finally did text, it was exactly how I imagined. We need to talk. Not hi. Not how are you. Just panic wrapped in politeness. I replied an hour later. My place. 8 p.m. Bring your guilt and leave your lipstick. She didn't respond. But at exactly 8:03 p.m., my doorbell rang. I opened the door barefoot, in nothing but a silk robe the color of sin and a glass of wine in my hand. No bra. No panties. Just skin and confidence and a knowing smile. Charlotte stood there like a statue of indecision. Her trench coat was belted too tight, like she was trying to hold herself together with buttons. Her eyes were wide. Scared. Curious. Desperate. I stepped aside. She hesitated for a heartbeat. Then walked in. I closed the door, locking it slowly. The sound echoed in the room like a promise. You came, I said softly. She swallowed. I shouldn't have. But you did. She didn't answer. Her eyes flicked around the apartment, dim lighting, candles lit, shadows dancing across the walls. The scent of vanilla and smoke filled the air, thick and almost intoxicating. I watched her breathe it in like she was preparing for a funeral. She turned to me. I don't know who I am when I'm around you. I walked toward her, slow and deliberate, like a predator approaching a wounded animal. I didn't touch her. Not yet. I just stood close enough that she could feel my heat. That's because no one's ever let you be real before. She looked up at me, eyes wet. What if I hate the real me? I smiled. Then I'll love her for both of us. Her lips trembled. And that's when I kissed her. This time it wasn't soft. It wasn't shy. It was fucking war. My mouth claimed hers, hard and unrelenting. Her coat fell to the floor with a soft thud, and I pressed her against the wall, hands sliding under her blouse, skin to skin, fire to fire. She gasped into my mouth when my fingers found her bra clasp and undid it with a flick. She was shaking, not from fear, but from the pressure of finally letting go. I can't do this, she whispered as I kissed her neck, dragging my lips down to the hollow of her throat. You already are. I led her to the bedroom, undressed her like a secret, kissed every inch of her like a prayer. Her body was a contradiction, tense, soft, hungry, ashamed. She moaned my name like she was afraid of what it meant. And when I finally slid my tongue between her thighs, she shattered. Completely. Her hands gripped the sheets. Her thighs trembled. She came so hard she cried, and I licked up every tear like it was holy. When it was over, she curled up beside me. Naked. Quiet. Her head on my chest. Her breathing shallow. She spoke into the silence. I've never done anything like this before. I brushed her hair away from her face. I know. I should feel horrible. I said nothing. But I don't. I smiled. That's how it starts. That's how I know I have them. I let her sleep for an hour. Her body wrapped around mine like she was trying to merge with me. But eventually reality crept back in. Her phone buzzed from across the room. Then again. And again. She sat up, panic flashing across her face. Shit. It's late. I watched her scramble for her clothes, hands trembling as she slipped her blouse back on and buttoned it wrong twice. James will wonder, she mumbled, mostly to herself. I stood completely bare, sipping wine as I leaned against the doorframe. Let him wonder. She shook her head. You don't get it. He's controlling. I cut in. Manipulative? Distant. She flinched. I hit a nerve. He's not a bad man, she said too quickly. I tilted my head. Then why do you feel like you're cheating for the first time? She froze. I stepped closer. You've been living someone else's life, Charlotte. Someone else's idea of perfect. But here, with me? You don't have to pretend. You don't have to smile when you want to scream. You don't have to be his wife. Her lip quivered. But I am. I gently cupped her face. Not tonight. She looked at me, really looked at me. And for a moment, I thought she might stay. But guilt has claws. And it dragged her out my door like a thief in the night. She didn't kiss me goodbye. Didn't say a word. Just grabbed her heels, pulled her coat tight, and disappeared. I stood there for a long time after she left. Naked. Calm. Smiling. Because I knew something she didn't. Guilt only works on the weak. And Charlotte Caldwell? Was getting stronger. Because of me. Chapter 5, When Her Hands Wander. There's something about a woman's hands that tells you everything. It's not the way they move when she's trying to seduce you, no. That's performance. That's learned. That's curated in the mirror over decades of pretending. What tells the truth is what her hands do when she's not thinking. When she's caught off guard. When she forgets to be someone else. Charlotte's hands were like nervous butterflies at first, flitting, hovering, always retreating. She'd grip her coffee cup too tight, fidget with her rings, tug at her sleeves. Always busy, always betraying the war going on behind her perfect smile. But the more time she spent with me, the quieter her hands became. And then they started reaching. It was subtle at first. A touch to my wrist when I said something funny. A brush of her fingers across my collarbone as she adjusted a stray hair. A slow, trembling slide along the inside of my thigh when she thought no one was watching. Like a woman testing the boundaries of her own skin. But by the end of the third week, her hands stopped asking for permission. We met in hotel rooms now. Quiet, high-floor suites far away from the eyes of her neighbors, her husband, her curated world of PDA meetings and charity luncheons. She'd check in under a fake name, Marlowe of all things, and text me the room number with just two words. I'm ready. I'd arrive an hour later, sometimes less. No knocking. No ceremony. Just a key card and a body already aching before the door shut behind me. The first time her hands really wandered, I was leaning against the window of the 29th floor suite, watching the city glitter like broken glass under a dying sun. She came up behind me, wrapped her arms around my waist, and slid her hands under my shirt, palms warm, fingers soft, heart pounding like a prisoner desperate to escape. You feel different when I touch you, she whispered against my neck. How so? I asked, already breathless. Like I'm allowed to be someone else. I turned slowly in her arms. Looked into those eyes I'd learned to read like scripture. You're not someone else. You're just finally being you. And then she kissed me. Hard. Hungry. Like she'd been starving all her life, and I was the first thing that tasted real. She pushed me back onto the bed, climbed over me, and tore my blouse open like she was breaking free of her own bones. Her kisses weren't soft anymore. They were desperate. Wet. Messy. Her hands found my breasts like she'd memorized every inch of me in her dreams. And when she pulled my pants down, she didn't hesitate. Charlotte fucking Caldwell, suburban goddess, nonprofit darling, Mrs. James Caldwell, slid her tongue between my thighs like a woman reborn. I moaned so loud I thought the glass might crack. She was trembling, moaning into me, whispering my name like it was a confession. And when I came, my fingers tangled in her hair and pulled until her eyes rolled back with mine. When it was over, we laid there in silence. Naked. Sweating. Alive. Her hand rested on my stomach, fingers lazily tracing circles as if they were drawing a map of everything she was afraid to say out loud. I dreamed about you last night, she whispered. What happened? I told you I loved you. I didn't say anything. Because the part that scared her wasn't that she said it. It was that she meant it. That night, I watched her get dressed again, watched the armor come back on one piece at a time. The silk blouse. The diamond earrings. The nude pumps. And finally the wedding ring. Do you still wear that for him? I asked. She froze mid-step. No, she said quietly. I wear it for everyone else. So they don't ask questions. I walked up behind her, wrapped my arms around her waist, and kissed the back of her neck. You don't owe them anything. I owe myself a life that doesn't feel like a lie. Then stop living his. She didn't answer. Just leaned into me for a moment longer than she should have. Then left without looking back. But something shifted after that. She started texting me at odd hours. Midnight. 2 a.m. Once even 4:13 a.m. I can still feel your breath on my skin. I wore your perfume today instead of mine. No one noticed. Sometimes I pretend I'm sick just so I don't have to see him. She'd come over when James was at business dinners. The kind that always ended with him returning home smelling like guilt and Chanel. She'd crawl into my bed without a word, and let me hold her until her breathing slowed. Sometimes we didn't even have sex. Sometimes we just laid there, her head on my chest, her hands wrapped in mine like they were learning how to trust. And still, her guilt lingered. It clung to her like static, always buzzing just under the surface. I started noticing the bruises, too. Not the kind he left. No, James was too smart for that. Too polished. His marks were psychological. Invisible. But I saw the damage anyway. I saw it in the way she jumped when her phone rang. In the way she apologized too quickly. In the way her eyes dimmed every time she mentioned their family trips or marital counseling. I wanted to kill him. Not literally, though the thought had crossed my mind. I wanted to kill the version of her he'd built. The caged version. The obedient wife. The smiling puppet with pearls for strings. And I wanted to help her become something else. One night, after another round of breathless sex and whispered guilt, I asked her, "What do you want, Charlotte?" "Not what you think you should want. What you want?" She was silent for a long time. Then she said, "I want to stop disappearing inside my own life." I kissed her shoulder. "Then let me pull you out." Her hands gripped mine tightly. And that night, for the first time, she didn't rush to leave. She stayed. Until sunrise. We made pancakes. We danced in the kitchen half-naked to Al Green. She laughed, like really laughed. And when she caught her reflection in the mirror above the sink, she whispered, almost in awe, "I don't even recognize myself." I smiled. That's the point. But I knew the truth. James was going to find out. He was too arrogant not to miss the signs. And when he did, all hell would break loose. But I wasn't scared. Because her hands no longer trembled. They claimed me. And when a woman's hands stop wandering, that's when she starts choosing. And she was choosing me. Chapter 6, The Explosion We Made. The thing about lies is that they always want to be found. They scratch at the walls of your throat, begging to be screamed. They bleed through your pores. They linger on your skin like perfume. One spritz too strong, one second too long. And no matter how careful you are, no matter how perfectly you tiptoe across your web of secrets, there's always that one moment when the whole goddamn thing snaps. That moment came on a Tuesday. Not some dramatic weekend discovery. Not a scene ripped from a soap opera. No. It came like a whisper, quiet, slow, inevitable. James found out. Or rather, James confirmed what he'd been suspecting. Because he knew something was wrong. Of course he did. His wife wasn't pulling away in the way men expect. She wasn't cold. She wasn't combative. She wasn't cruel. That would have made it easier for him to blame her. No, Charlotte was radiant. Light. Her skin glowed like she'd been touched by something sacred. Her laughter came more freely. She walked with purpose again. He didn't recognize her anymore. And that terrified him. Because somewhere, deep in his rotting soul, he knew she had been reborn. And he hadn't been the one to do it. He just didn't know her resurrection came in the form of my tongue between her thighs and my hands around her throat, while she whispered how dead she used to feel before me. But now he knew. It was a Thursday night when she showed up at my apartment without calling. That alone told me something was wrong. She looked wild, unbrushed hair, mascara smudged under her eyes, a trench coat thrown over what I quickly realized was nothing underneath. She stepped inside and immediately shut the door behind her. Locked it. Bolted it. Her breathing was shallow. Her hands shaking. Her eyes wide and glassy with fear. "Charlotte," I said softly, approaching her slowly like I would a wounded animal. "What happened?" "He knows." My heart stopped. For half a second, I forgot to breathe. "James," she nodded. "Are you okay? Did he?" "No," she cut me off. "Not physically. He didn't touch me. But the way he looked at me," she trailed off. And I saw it then, that flicker of something primal in her. Not just fear. Something darker. Fury. I touched her face. "What did he say?" "He asked if I was cheating." I didn't answer. I couldn't. I just froze. "And then he said," her voice cracked. "He said he always knew I wasn't strong enough to stay loyal." My jaw clenched. "That motherfucker." She cut me off again. "No. Listen. He said it like he owned me. Like I was a piece of property that had suddenly malfunctioned." I stared at her. And something in me snapped. This wasn't just a love affair anymore. This wasn't some twisted game between two women and one clueless man. This was war. And he had drawn blood. "He doesn't deserve your loyalty," I said, stepping closer. "He never did." She stared at me like I was the only real thing in her life. "I'm not going back there," she whispered. "I packed a bag. I didn't even tell the kids. I just drove here. I don't know what I'm doing. I just knew I had to see you. I had to feel safe," I finished for her. She nodded, trembling. I took her coat off, revealing bare skin, goosebumps running down her arms, her thighs, her belly. She was shaking not just from fear, but from freedom. It was the look of a woman unchained. I didn't take her to bed. I worshipped her. I laid her down on my couch and kissed every inch of her body like I was marking territory. My mouth moved slowly, deliberately, not for pleasure, but for proof. Proof that she belonged here. That she was mine now. My tongue painted circles on her hips. My lips grazed her collarbone. My fingertips left fire in their wake. And when I slid inside her, her moan was so raw, so guttural, I thought it might tear a hole through the sky. We didn't fuck that night. We combusted. Over and over and over again. After, she laid on my chest, silent for a long time. Then she whispered, I want to ruin him. I blinked. What? I want to burn everything down. Every lie, every secret. I want to erase him. I smiled. Dark. Wicked. You sure about that, baby? Her eyes gleamed in the candlelight. He made me small for 10 years. Made me feel lucky to be chosen. Made me apologize for taking up space. And now, she sat up slowly, fully naked, powerful and unashamed. Now I want to show him what it feels like to be forgotten. I sat up too, wrapping my arms around her waist. I can help you do that. She turned to me. How? I pulled her close. We don't just ruin him. We expose him. Charlotte paused. You mean publicly? No. Personally. We make him feel what you felt every day of your marriage. We make him question his worth. His status. His sanity. We don't just cheat back, we make him beg for the pain to stop. For a moment she just stared at me. Then she smiled. And it was the first time I'd seen her smile like me. What do we do first? We plant the seed. We let him spiral. We feed his paranoia until he becomes a shell of himself. She bit her lip. And then, I leaned in. We fuck on his dining room table while he's away on a business trip. She laughed. A real full-bodied laugh that made my skin heat. And then she kissed me. Hard. Fast. Breathless. The kind of kiss that ignites a match. From that night on, everything changed. She moved in under the guise of separation. James texted. Called. Threatened. Pleaded. Then texted again. Charlotte ignored him. She changed her number. Blocked his emails. Told the kids she needed time. And behind the curtain? We planned his downfall. I started leaking little clues. Lipstick on his shirts. Emails from fake accounts. Suspicious charges on their shared card. Texts from a burner phone signed, R. Just enough to fuck with him, not enough to confirm the affair. And it worked. He cracked like porcelain. Charlotte met with him once, just once. Over lunch in the city. I watched from across the street. His hands trembled. His eyes darted. He looked pale, exhausted, broken. And Charlotte? She looked glorious. Like a goddess with a blade hidden in her smile. She came back to me that night glowing. He asked me if there was someone else, she said, stripping off her blouse in the kitchen. What did you say? She grinned. I said there was someone better. I pulled her onto the counter and kissed her like the world was ending. Because it was, at least his world was. And we were dancing in the flames. But I should have known something was coming. Something darker. Because a man like James Caldwell doesn't just surrender. He strikes back. And he was about to hit harder than either of us were ready for. Chapter 7, The Ashes We Chose. I always knew it wouldn't end quietly. You don't play with fire and expect to come out smelling like roses. You expect to burn. And that's the thing about destruction, it's addictive. One match, one lie, one touch too long, and the entire structure of your carefully built life goes up in flames. But what people don't talk about is what comes after. The silence. The smoke. The haunting knowledge that you chose this. And we did. We chose this. We chose ruin. The day it all imploded was nothing special. No storm clouds. No dramatic music playing in the background. Just a quiet Sunday afternoon. Charlotte was in my kitchen barefoot, wearing one of my oversized shirts and making tea like she hadn't just betrayed a decade of vows. I was on the couch, scrolling, half distracted, watching the way her legs looked when the hem rode up. Then my phone buzzed. Blocked number. No message. Then hers did too. Blocked number. Still nothing. We looked at each other. And in that second I felt it. That low, vibrating pulse of something wrong. She walked over, tea in hand, and sat beside me. He knows more than he let on. I nodded slowly. Yeah, he's planning something. He's not the kind of man who begs for attention and disappears. He's the kind of man who waits until you're relaxed, then drags you out by the throat. That night we didn't have sex. We didn't touch. We sat in silence, pretending we weren't thinking the same thing. What does James Caldwell know? What is he going to do with it? By Monday morning, we had our answer. It came wrapped in a silver envelope delivered to my front door by a courier in a navy suit who wouldn't meet my eyes. I opened it with a flick of my knife. Inside, legal documents. Photos. A typed letter. Every photo was of us. Me naked in her arms. Her straddling me on my living room floor. Her moaning into my mouth with my hand between her thighs. My address. My full name. A note. You broke something sacred. Now I'm going to break you. It wasn't a threat. It was a declaration. James had hired a private investigator. He'd been tracking Charlotte since the moment she walked out of his house. Every time she thought she was alone, every time she cried in my arms or fucked me against the wall or kissed me in an elevator. He had a camera on her. And now he had leverage. Divorce proceedings. Full custody demands. Allegations of neglect, instability, and psychological manipulation. He even had statements from their live-in nanny and Charlotte's therapist, painting her as erratic and emotionally compromised. I felt the breath leave her body when she finished reading. She looked up at me. I'm going to lose them. No, you're not. I am, Riley. He's got everything. He's going to paint me like I'm some unfit mother who ran off with a whore. I grabbed her face. Stop. You are not unfit. You are not weak. You're a woman who finally chose herself. She blinked through tears. But I can't lose them. I can't lose the only pieces of me that still make sense. Her voice cracked like glass under pressure. And I knew what I had to do, even if it meant letting go. The next week was a storm of lawyers and strategy. I helped her pull together a defense team, cutthroat women who knew how to weaponize a clean record and emotional abuse claims. Charlotte was interviewed, her life dissected. My name came up more times than I could count, and every time, I knew what they were thinking. Another mistress. Another homewrecker. Another woman who fucked her way into someone else's life. They didn't see the truth. They didn't see the bruises under Charlotte's smile. The years of gaslighting buried in pearls and dinners with people who never really knew her. They didn't see the woman who had clawed her way out of a cage, only to be hunted down for it. But I saw her. And I loved her. God help me, I loved her in a way I never thought I was capable of. Which is why I did what I did. I called James. Private number. No hesitation. He answered with venom in his voice. I was wondering when you'd crawl out from between her legs and call. You win, I said flatly. Silence. What? You win. You want her back. Take her. You want the house, the kids, the image? It's yours. Just drop the full custody play. Leave her the chance to be a mother. He laughed. Why would I do that? Because I'll disappear. He hesitated. I'll vanish. No contact. No interference. No more late-night rendezvous or whispers in the dark. I'll be gone so clean, you'll think she made me up. You expect me to believe that? No, I said quietly. I expect you to want it bad enough to say yes anyway. And the sick bastard agreed. But on one condition. I had to tell her myself. Face to face. Let her break on her own. The night I told Charlotte was the first time she slapped me. Hard. Across the face. No hesitation. Just pain, betrayal, desperation. You're doing this for him? She screamed. No, I said through the sting. I'm doing this for you. I don't want you to leave. Then he'll take the kids. I don't care. You will. I roared back, tears burning down my cheeks. You will when he poisons their minds against you. You will when you can't see them except on holidays. You will when they stop calling you mom and start calling you that woman who left us. She fell to the floor then, sobbing. And I held her. All night. Until sunrise. And then I was gone. I left a note. I left no forwarding address. I deleted every trace of myself from her phone, her email, her calendar. I deleted us. 6 months passed. I kept low. Changed cities. Cut my hair. Took freelance gigs and anonymous lovers. None of them tasted like her. None of them made me feel like her fingers on my skin, or her laugh in my ear, or her scent on my pillow. I never stopped loving her. I just loved her from a distance. Until one night I got a letter. No name. No return address. Just a single sentence, written in her handwriting. The kids are safe. And I still sleep on your side of the bed. I stared at those words for hours, smiling, crying, because even in ruin, even in silence, we chose our ashes together. And sometimes that's the only kind of happy ending you get. Not flowers, not rings, not forever, just a memory that burns beautifully, forever seared into the skin you both once called home.